This is an Equity Bates Media podcast.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I will say this about investing. Everything you do learn is cumulative. What I learned at 20 is useful.
Welcome to another episode of Equity Mates, a podcast that follows our journey of investing. Whether you're an absolute beginner or approaching Warren Buffett status, our aim is to help break down your barriers from beginning to dividend. My name is Bryce, and as always, I'm joined by my equity buddy, Ren. How are you going?
I'm very good, Bryce. Great to be back here for another installment of our ASX week. We're featuring some of the best presenters from the ASX Investor Day. And I'm excited for this one because we're going to be talking about an area of the market that we traditionally haven't been able to access, but there's been some unbelievable returns, and that's in the private equity world.
That's it. It is our pleasure to welcome Chris DeMasi. Chris, welcome.
Thanks for having me, Bryce.
So Chris is the co-founder and portfolio manager of Montaka Global Investments. Montaka run two ASX-listed funds, the Montaka Global Long Only Equities Fund, the ticker is MOGL, and the Montaka Global Extension Fund, the ticker is MKAX. And as Ren said, the presentation that Chris did for the ASX Investor Day focused on the opportunity that investing in private markets has and how we can access that through the ASX. So we're going to unpack all of that today, Chris.
Excellent.
So Chris, let's start with a definition for people who are hearing private markets and unsure what we're talking about. What do we mean when we talk about private markets?
Private markets are just the investing markets that aren't tradable. So we're used to the public markets like stock exchanges all around the world. Private markets are different in that they're not accessible by the general public. They're typically the domain of wholesale and institutional investors that directly invest in companies or projects or lend money. And I'd say another defining feature of the private markets is that they're relatively illiquid as well. Once these big institutions have invested, they can't get their money back so quickly.
So Chris, why private markets? How is the opportunity set with private markets different to those that are, you know, the public markets?
I mean, it's really two questions. Why private markets for the big investors in the private market funds, and then why private markets for us where we see an opportunity as well? But I'll focus on the first. And what we've seen in private markets is that there are just more and better opportunities in that space, and that's leading to better returns as well over long periods of time for these investors. So they can commit capital to opportunities they wouldn't have had access to in the public markets, and they can get better returns, often with lower risk in doing that.
It would be good to sort of set the scene and understand what's been happening over the past decade, more than a decade, because, you know, we hear about that opportunity in private markets and, you know, some of the crazy companies that are staying private for longer or choosing not to go public. Yeah. So help us like put it in context, like what has been happening in private markets?
Ren, if you go back, you know, 20 years now, sounds like a long time, but it's just really just going back to the early 2000s. Private markets were really just a speck, just a little dot. And they've expanded 10 times between then and now. So it's a $7 trillion plus market. And at the same time, what's been going on there is that there's been less and less opportunities available in public markets, and just a greater number of opportunities available in the private market. So you take the equity space, for example. The number of equities listed on public stock exchanges around the world has halved in the last 20 years.
Yeah.
And at the same time, the private equity-owned companies have multiplied by five. So there's just plenty more opportunities in the space.
Mm, I think people would be really surprised by that, that in, you know, in the last 20 years, it feels like so many more people have been interested in investing and so many new companies have come to market, and yet the number of listed companies has halved.
Well, that's right, because there's actually been an increase in the age of companies that are coming public, especially in the most attractive areas. So in the areas like technology, some of the companies that are at the forefront of digital transformations. And so, for example, if you go back to 1997 and Amazon came public that year, it was just 3 years old.
Mm.
The company wasn't even worth $1 billion at the time. And now it's worth $1.7 trillion. And you sort of fast forward and you look at all of the technology companies that have listed over the last couple of years, like the Ubers and the Airbnbs. I mean, they're 10, 12 years old or more, and they're coming to market with tens of billions of dollars of market cap, sometimes even more than that. Look, I think what's really interesting for investors there is that public market investors were able to participate in all of that value creation, along with Jeff Bezos, of course, in Amazon. Almost the whole of the $1.7 trillion is sitting in Jeff's and public market investors' hands, whereas you look at something like an Airbnb or an Uber, they'd already created so much value by the time they came public that all of that value creation has happened for the founders and the private market investors. So to get a piece of that, to participate in that, investors really need to turn more and more to the private markets. And that's exactly what they have been doing over the last couple of decades.
And I mean, the most extreme example of that is the two companies that I think everyone in the world wants to invest in today, which is Stripe and SpaceX, both of which may never need to go public, but if they do, it will be at $100 billion plus valuations.
Yeah, I mean, they're both, if you know, one's almost touching $100 billion valuation, the other one's just a tick over. But that's a great point. They don't necessarily need to come public, and it's a bit of a chicken and an egg. So as the opportunity set has really broadened out in the private markets, more and more money has flooded in.
Mm.
And as more and more money comes in, more companies don't find the need to go public to raise money to fund their losses and to fund their investments because there's plenty of money around in the private markets for them to do that.
Mm.
And so you end up in this situation where you really need to be investing in private markets to be able to access these returns as well.
So we're seeing a shift away from the public, away from public into more private, but what is that being reflected in portfolios, like in terms of allocation, private market sector? Is that shift really starting to happen as well?
Well, the shift is happening. Is it being reflected in portfolios to date? No, it's not. So if you look across investor portfolios today, only about 7% of portfolios are allocated to private market investments.
Mm.
I'm looking wide and broad. So I'm looking at institutional portfolios, sovereign wealth funds, the big endowments, insurance companies, investment portfolios, and even wealthy individuals, their portfolios. So across all of them, just 7% of their portfolios are in private markets today. But that is changing. And there's this shift towards the private markets. And of course, coming off such a low base, you only need small changes to make a really big difference. And so there's already a lot of intent and we're seeing a lot of money moving towards the private markets. And by 2025, that 7% is going to go to 10%. But what that means is an extra $6 trillion is going to come into the space. It's just staggering, the amounts. And I mean, we're only sort of touching the tip of the iceberg, really, to think about the opportunities that we're talking about that are in the private markets, but to still only have 10% of your portfolio allocated to the asset class, I mean, there's a long runway for growth ahead.
Yeah, it's pretty fascinating. So let's get a bit specific and let's talk about some of the big names in the space. who should we be aware of, either individuals or companies that are big players in this private, in these private markets?
There's a handful of companies really matter. So across the world today, there's about 11,000 firms that manage money in the private investment arena. But five of them command 30% of the assets there. So you get $7 trillion in assets, $2 trillion sit with just five companies.
Wow, okay.
Five managers.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'd like to say they're the household names, but really, you know, as we've found out along the way, because private markets have been the domain of big wholesale investors, these managers aren't really well known to everybody. But the big names there are Blackstone. That's by far and away the number one in the market, but also Apollo, KKR, Carlyle, and Ares out of New York as well. We're invested in three out of the five of those.
All American?
Of that set.
Yeah.
You could say they're American, but they have global operations.
Yeah.
I mean, it's come so far. I mean, even, you know, you go back to the 90s and really private market investing was private equity, and it was actually all about US leverage buyouts.
Yeah,
you know, the sort of stuff that Richard Gere's doing on Pretty Woman. It's that, right? And you fast forward today, and that sort of that style of investing is less than 20% of private market investing. It's just ballooned, and so you know, there's new styles of investing. There's new asset classes, like we've gone into venture capital and growth equity, but also distressed lending and real estate projects. But it's also expanded geographically.
Yeah.
And there's plenty that's being done outside of the US. In fact, last year there was more money raised to go into Asian equity funds than there was money raised to go into US funds, right? So it's truly a global business, and all of these managers have operations all over the world.
Yeah. I mean, even in Australia, we're preparing to interview the CEO of BWX, the natural beauty and skincare company, and they had a private equity company, Bain, try and buy them out a few years ago.
Yeah.
So, like, it's touching everywhere in
the
world.
They're in our backyard as well.
Yeah.
Well, I wanted to ask on that. We are going to do a bit of a deep dive on Blackstone in a moment, but what's the landscape like here in Australia for private markets? You know, there's some big global players, but you know, how does Australia compare?
Yeah, we're a pretty sophisticated market. So, you know, when we've looked at private markets, we've looked at private markets around the world because we're global investors. But even just having a look around Australia, a lot of the big names are here. Blackstone, KKR are here. Some of the big banks have private investing activities, whether they do it off their own balance sheet or they raise money, it could even be overseas, to invest in our markets, like, for example, Goldman Sachs. And then there's just a swathe of other mid-market and smaller private investment managers, probably, you know, part of the group of 11,000 that aren't the top five.
So when we talk about private markets, we're talking about those big five are sort of private equity players. That's sort of what you'd call them. There's also a number of big names in the venture capital space, the Sequoias of the world. How do you think about them? Are they just, in terms of assets, just nowhere near as big as these players? Or do you sort of separate them and think of them differently?
Differently because they play in one space.
Yeah,
okay. So it's venture capital or venture equity. And then when I think about the global asset managers that we're talking about, they do that as well as a range of other things. So they are so much bigger, but they're so much bigger because they're large within venture capital now and becoming more and more so because that's what their clients are demanding.
Yeah.
They're also big in different asset classes. Mm. You know, growth equity, distressed lending, special situations, real estate, natural resources. You know, some of the, you know, the venture capital specialists aren't doing such a wide range of investing.
Yeah.
And that comes with a whole set of advantages for those big asset managers, because they can do everything for their clients.
Yeah, full service.
Yeah. One-stop shop.
Yeah. That's what we need. We need Equity Mates needs to get in with one of them, and then we can get everything done. All about natural resources lending.
So, Chris, we've set the scene. We kind of understand what's going on in the space. Let's take a look at how we actually can invest in private markets, because that's the interesting stuff. But before we do, we'll take a quick word from our sponsors.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
So most people, if they were to invest in private markets, they'd be investing in private funds like KKR, Blackstone that, you know, we've spoken about. But Montica take a different approach and believe investing in the managers themselves is a better option. Can you expand on that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the funds have done really well. If you could get invested in those funds, you'd probably do okay as well.
Yeah, you'd do pretty well.
But I'd say to you, I mean, it's an interesting question. How would you invest in those funds?
Well, that's going to be my next question.
You need a bit of cash.
Right. You do. And then if I gave you a menu of them, how would you pick which one you want to be invested in?
True, yeah.
And so what's so attractive to us about the managers, beyond being very accessible, and I'll come to that, is that they win no matter what. Okay, so it doesn't matter which funds do well or which strategies or asset classes do well. These large asset managers, they do well when the whole industry does well. Mm. And they also are able to take advantage not just of the performance of the funds, but also the growth in the industry and the expansion of the space. So more and more flows coming into the space, more assets being allocated, even separate to the performance and the returns that are coming out of the space. They're able to make money out of both of these things. You know, if you're an investor in the fund, you might do well out of one particular fund or you might not. You're an investor in the asset manager. It doesn't matter which of them does well. You're going to do well. And you also get to benefit from more money being allocated to these strategies over time.
And just to really spell that out for people, is it similar to like a hedge fund manager that has a management fee and then a performance fee?
Yeah, that's right. So that, look, they make money a few different ways.
Yeah.
And that's really attractive too. So private market asset managers, they make a management fee. So they take a percentage of the assets for managing them.
And so for more money coming into the space, regardless of how well it does, management fees will
You're going to make more money.
Yeah.
And then if you can perform well, the asset base grows and your clients place that money back with you again. And so you make money when you perform well too, even just off the management fee. And then look, there's a second way that they make money is from performance fees. So they take a share of the profits.
Mm.
And again, if the funds perform well, or the better that the funds perform, the higher that profit share is. But if you run a larger asset base, you can take a clip of the profits of many more dollars of assets of performance. And so they can make money that way too. And then thirdly, look, a lot of these firms often tip their own money into their deals and their investments, and so they can make additional gains by investing in their own funds. Yeah. There's several ways that they make money, and it's across two dimensions. It's across getting better performance, but also aggregating the assets as well.
So in your presentation for the ASX Investor Day, you identified one private manager that you think is the best opportunity, and we want to get to that. But before we do, you mentioned earlier, you said you own three of the biggest five. You obviously don't think the one that we're going to get to is the only opportunity. I guess why the three and not the other two?
They're all quite similar. And they're all going to do really, really well with the expansion of the universe of private market investments. But they all have slightly nuanced differences as well across a couple of different dimensions. And, you know, one is probably a little bit more advanced or further along its journey than the other. Some of them invest more of their money in their own deals than others. So they do things a little bit differently. But in total, they're all very, very attractive because they're all so well placed to do well out of this trend. Because at the end of the day, they're the biggest and the best in the world. And really, you're splitting hairs when it comes down to
it. So it's not like they're wildly different. It's about the process that you guys go through to identify the best opportunities.
Absolutely. And then for us, at the end of the day, you know, there's a value equation there as well. So it's understanding for us which of these businesses are going to be the winners, who's going to lead the growth in the space. And we know that there's plenty of growth in that market.
Mm.
And then really trying to understand which ones are being underappreciated or undervalued by the market. And honestly, we think each and every one of those three, KKR, Blackstone and Carlyle, are really being underappreciated today.
Yeah. So we've kept people in suspense long enough. We've told them that you're going to tell us which one you think is the best opportunity. So in your presentation, you said it was Blackstone, which trades on the New York Stock Exchange, ticker BX. What specifically does the company do? Like, does it focus on any area of private equity? And why do you think it's better than its competitors?
Yeah, so Blackstone is the biggest and the best. It's the gold class in the private market investing space. So they're number one. They have $781 billion under management. With a B.
Yeah. I mean, if they keep growing, it will soon be with a T.
Well, this is what's amazing. It absolutely will still be with a T. And in fact, we think it's only going to be a few years before they're a trillion and a $2 trillion manager. And it's because of the scale advantage that they have. They're the biggest and the best in the market. And that has meant over time that they've been able to get bigger and leverage that scale and really start to spin their own flywheel of success, we would say.
Mm.
So they've started from a point where they were a trusted partner for their clients and they made them excellent returns. So Blackstone's key funds have made on average 15% per year for over 30 years.
Jeez.
And then as a client, you're pretty happy with that return. And so not only are you willing to put your money back with Blackstone, but you're probably happy to tip in more money. And in fact, we've seen more clients come to Blackstone as well. So they end up earning a lot more in fees, of course. They have invested that back in their platform and their business over time. And so that means that they've been able to get the best talent, build up the scale of their operations, see the best deals, service their clients the best. And at the end of the day, what that means is that they offer better client solutions and better performance, and it just starts to feed on itself.
Yeah.
And that's happened for the last 35 years in Blackstone's case. And that flywheel doesn't slow down. In fact, it keeps spinning with its own momentum. And we think that that's going to happen for the better part of the next decade or more.
You speak about the benefits of scale, fees on assets under management. $781 billion sounds great, but the big guy BlackRock sitting with $9.5 trillion, what's the argument for Blackstone against someone like BlackRock?
You're a hard man to please. $781 billion isn't enough. We want more.
I want the top end of town.
I'll tell you, look there. You could be absolutely right, but they're just two different beasts. Blackstone is involved in the private markets as a very active investor, and the value proposition there is really strong outperformance, and you pay for that.
Mm.
Those management fees are relatively high, but you pay for it because of the strong performance. Whereas BlackRock has a different value proposition. What they're selling is broad market exposure at a very, very low and falling cost. So they both have their place for institutional investors and even the retail market, but they're just doing two very different things. And we prefer to be in a space where the fees and the margins are higher and the value proposition is away from just a very cheap price.
Yeah.
Whereas, BlackRock is doing something very different, and they're competing on fees, and they can do that because they have such enormous scale, but they really need to have those $9 trillion in there. And they just don't make as much off that $9 trillion as what Blackstone does. You know, they've got 12 times as much assets, but they don't really make more than maybe double what Blackstone is making in fees because of the different the different markets they
play.
That's
interesting.
On that point around fees, so we've seen in the listed equity space, fees have come right down. You know, ETFs have driven the charge, but all active managers have had to really follow suit. With the big five in the private equity space, do you expect a similar competition around fees and a lowering of fees to get more assets?
Yeah, what's been really nice in that space and really nice as an investor in the manager is that those fees have been very persistent over a long period of time. And there's a couple of reasons why. What we've seen happen in the public space is returns have compressed around the average or the median.
Mm.
That hasn't been the case in private markets. There's really large dispersion. And so the top performing funds do really, really well. They do much better than the pack. Mm. And investors are willing to pay for the potential of that outperformance again. So that's one reason why we see fees being quite persistent in the private arena going forward. And the other reason is because it's not as easy to invest in the space. So in the public space, you can put your money in an ETF. You can, you know, it's this whole rise of passive investing. That doesn't exist in private markets. There's no way to access this space without going to the private equity or the private capital asset managers.
Mm.
They really sit right in the center of this expanding universe, and they're controlling the flows and controlling the investment opportunities and making a lot of money in the middle.
Mm.
And there's not much about that we could see that's going to disrupt that, like what has happened in the public arena.
Yeah.
And so that's really valuable as a shareholder in those businesses, is that pricing persistency.
So Chris, you'd obviously have a thesis for Blackstone. It's 10 bagged over the past decade. Must be nice. And so that, I guess, begs the question, how big do you think it can get to over the next decade?
The 10 bagger over the last 10 years would have been really nice, but we've only been going for 6 years. What has been excellent is it's doubled just this year. And so it's been a great contributor to the portfolio. But I think what's more important is we don't see that coming to an end. And so there's still plenty left in the stock. And even after doubling this year, I still think that the stock is underappreciating what the true future earnings potential is going to be at Blackstone. So you start today with just under $4 billion of earnings. And when you think through the basic building blocks of industry growth and Blackstone's ability to increase their share and their increasing profitability over time and those additional performance fees and profit share, and you package all of that up, where we get to is $20 billion of future earnings power. So it's a fivefold increase. And while that's happening, profit margins are going up and the fees are getting stickier and more predictable. And that's much more valuable as well. So, look, I'm not ruling out a 10-bagger over time again, but we definitely see a path to the stock appreciating by five times or more from here.
Nice. Yeah, well.
That's what we want to hear.
Does it get to a point where the amount of money in the space is bigger than the opportunity set? Like that they have to start chasing worse deals, or there's just not enough places to put all this money?
I had the same question in our internal sales meeting this morning with the guys.
Right, we're on the same page.
You're on the same page. And I feel like the story's such a good one that people are trying to find what's wrong with this. Yeah, there's plenty of money in the private equity space looking for a home right now, a couple of $1 trillion. Even though that's the most on record, compared to the size of the markets and the amount of activity that's going on, it's actually not going to take very long to deploy. Believe it or not, probably less than 2 years to deploy that money. But I think what you've got to do is come back to the size of the investment market universe. While there's trillions of dollars sitting there waiting to be deployed in private equity, and the space of private markets is a $7 trillion industry, compare that to the amount of assets in the world that are being managed. It's over $100 trillion today.
Mm.
Now, there's $4.5 trillion in private equity funds, just the equity part. There's $116 trillion of market cap on global public stock exchanges. So there's plenty of places where that money can be deployed. There's plenty of assets that that can be bought, plenty of companies that can be invested in, plenty of places for them to go and lend and to fund projects. So I don't think that that's going to be a problem, because while we're talking trillions of dollars of money that needs to find a home, there's tens and hundreds of trillions of dollars of opportunities out there.
Just the scale of it all is mind-boggling.
Super funds as well. Like,
the goalposts have changed. Yeah. Millions has gone to billions has gone to. Yeah, we're operating in a world of trillions.
Yeah.
And it just shows the extent of the growth opportunity.
Yeah. I think one thing Bryce just said there is probably worth expanding on. So you mentioned super funds, but that those really long-term patient capital allocators, the super funds, the endowments, you know, the family offices of the world, they've been moving quite heavily to private equity. It's probably worth us just, you know, touching on what you're seeing there, because, you know, we love talking about long-term investing here at Equity Mates, and those guys are true long-term investors.
They are, and they've led the way. And if you look around the world, the biggest allocator to private markets, even beyond private equity, have been the endowments, typically the university endowments out of the United States. And so as a group, they've allocated about 27% of their portfolios to private markets.
Compared to 7%, which is the average. For the
industry. And, and so who's under indexing there? Well, while there's a couple of other institutions, it's also the insurance companies and retail money.
Mm.
And when I say retail money, it's everywhere from those high net worth individuals all the way down to sort of just the mass market.
Yeah.
And the retail market's huge. I mean, Blackstone a couple of months ago talked about the opportunity set outside of just the institutional investors. So that's a $60 trillion market. But then they talked about insurance being $30 trillion and the retail market being another being another $80 trillion of market opportunity. So, yeah, you're right. There are some pioneers out there and some super funds that have really been leading the way in investing in private markets.
Mm.
There's a lot that haven't been.
Yeah.
There's still got a lot of sort of making up to do. And then there's insurance companies and the retail space that are still under indexing, and you know they're only just getting going.
Mm.
Well, I think talking about retail investors and how they can access the space is a good segue to talk about the two funds that you run. Mm-hmm. So both listed on the ASX, MOGL and MKAX are the tickers. What can you explain what the differences are? Do they both offer access to this private equity thematic? Do they do it in different ways?
Yeah, Mogul and MKAX, and they're both pretty similar. And they absolutely both offer access to the private market theme that we've been talking about. Look, they both have the same mission, and that is to achieve superior compounding of our investors' capital. And that's right alongside our money as well, because we invest in both of these funds. So Mogul does that by investing in a concentrated portfolio of about two dozen holdings. They're the business winners in these attractive markets, like the private markets we've been talking about. They're underappreciated. So Mogul is a long-only fund that holds those two dozen opportunities, and we're patient holders and we see those compound returns happen over time. MKAX, on the other hand, is just a little bit different. It has an extra compounding power. So if you you think about Mogul, MKAX is investing in the same portfolio, but we're increasing the amount of investment in those holdings by typically 30%. For the same investment, you get 30% more investment in those excellent companies. And we do that by running a short portfolio. So we take the proceeds of shorting some other stocks that we don't like, and we invest it into that concentrated portfolio of stocks that we really do like.
Interesting. It's been a tough market to short the last sort of 18 months. Do you always get proceeds out of the shorts?
Yeah, so we get proceeds just by the nature of shorting. So we short those stocks, the money comes in, and then we use that extra money to invest more in those longs.
Nice. Well, Chris, it's been a fascinating conversation. Private markets, not one that we often get to touch on here at Equity Mates. So thank you very much for your time. We do have final three questions, but before we get to that, if people would like more info on what you're doing at Montica, where would be the best place to go?
They can just jump on the website, montica.com.
Easy. Are you on Twitter or TikTok?
We are. Personally, less so.
Nice one. And if people want to hear more about Blackstone, they can check out your presentation on the ASX Investor Day website. The link to that will be in the show notes to this episode. But let's get stuck into the final three questions. The first one is, do you have any books that you consider must read?
So when it comes to investing, the must read for me was a book called Margin of Safety by Seth Klarman.
Yeah.
And I think that's just a great way to learn the fundamentals of value investing and to really understand different assets, different markets, and how to value them. But the other, I think, required reading these days are Jeff Bezos's letters. And so you can read them like a book. You can start in 1997 and go through to the current version, kind of like packaging up Warren Buffett's Berkshire letters back in the day. I think they're a great way to understand how to really create tremendous long-term value, build wonderful advantages in business, and then apply them to just massive markets. And, you know, that's what we're trying to do every single day. So I think you've got to be a student of Jeff Bezos as well. So it's another one to look out for.
Yeah, I love that. Love Margin of Safety as well. I think it's the best investing book I've ever read. Difficult to get your hands on. I think it goes on Amazon for like a grand these days. But if you can get yourself a copy online,
you could secretly get a PDF copy, but you didn't hear it from me.
Yeah. Next question we like to ask, forget valuation or anything like that, just purely fundamentally, what's the best company you've ever seen?
One really big one and one really small one.
Yeah, great.
So you get two for your money. One really big one at the top end of town is Microsoft. I think it's the greatest company in the world. I think it's just been amazing how they've taken a monopoly position in the PC market paradigm of, you know, the 80s and the 90s and transitioned that into almost an equally dominant position in cloud software and computing. And they've really got a license to print money for a long, long time. Incredible pricing power. Incredible scalability, and it's just a fantastic company. And then I'd say at the other end of the spectrum and in our own backyard has been REA or realestate.com.au. I mean, it's the dominant number one in a two-horse race, and it similarly has a license to increase prices and print money over a long period of time, albeit in a smaller space down here in Australia.
It's fascinating that we asked this question, we've asked it every interview we've done this year, and, you know, we've got some of the ones you'd expect. We've got the Alphabets of the world. We've had Microsoft. But I think number one response is REA Group, which is fascinating. Yeah. It is just...
Home country bias, maybe.
Maybe a little bit, but it's just like it is amazing how...
Well, we can look all over the world, and we do, and it's the one stock that we have had or have in our portfolio from Australia, and we've had it from day one. And it's been an excellent performer because over time you just see those compound gains come through.
Yeah. And I think for me, like, those two answers are just a classic example of how investing in what you know and what you see around you is just so important. Like, we all use Microsoft products. If we bought a house, we've all looked on, you know, realestate.com. It's like these great businesses are in front of us. It's just about really seeing them. Yeah. So final question, if you think back to your early days, you know, just starting out as an investor, what advice would you have for your younger self?
Probably a few things that I've learned along the way that might be a little bit esoteric, but it would be continue to learn how to learn, continue to understand your own biases. And I'd say the other important piece of advice would be look for opinions different to yours and look for sources of information, eclectic sources of information, different to what other people are looking at. I think they're the ways that you can really get ahead in investing and probably in life as well.
I love that.
Love it. Well, thanks, Chris. It's been an absolute pleasure. As I said, not often we get to chat about this. So it's been really interesting, and I know that a lot of our community would have enjoyed it as well. So thank you for your time. Make sure you go and check out Chris's Prezzo on the ASX website. It'll also be on our YouTube channel. This podcast will be filmed on our website as well. So, been a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Hey, thanks for listening to this episode of Equity Mates. We love hearing from you, so drop us a line at contact@equitymates.com, or even better, go to your podcast player and leave a 5-star review. Also, a reminder that the Equity Mates content train doesn't stop when you've run out of episodes to binge. We've got a brand new website, a Facebook discussion group. We're on Instagram, YouTube, and slowly making our way as an influencer on TikTok. Well, that's Ren. So come and say hello and join the community. We'd love to welcome you. Until next time.
Equity Mates Investing Podcast is a product of Equity Mates Media. All information in this podcast is for education and entertainment purposes only. Equity Mates gives listeners access to information and educational content provided by a range of financial service professionals. It is not intended as a substitute for professional finance, legal, or tax advice. The hosts of Equity Mates Investing Podcast are not financial professionals and are not aware of your personal financial circumstances. Equity Mates Media does not operate under an Australian financial services license and relies on the exemption available under the Corporations Act 2001 in respect of any information or advice given. Before making any financial decisions, you should read the product disclosure statement and, if necessary, consult a licensed financial professional. Do not take financial advice from a podcast or video. For more information, head to the disclaimer page on the Equity Mates website, where you can find ASIC resources and find a registered financial professional near you. In the spirit of reconciliation, Equity Mates Media and the hosts of Equity Mates Investing Podcast acknowledge the traditional custodians of country throughout Australia and their connections to land, sea, and community. We pay our respects to their elders, past and present, and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people today.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia, movement that inspires. Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.